Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Wade Wegner.
And I'm Steve Marks.
This week we're going to talk about the Global Traffic Manager, which is a service that we launched about a month ago at Mix. It's in CTP, and we're going to walk through the Global Traffic Manager and talk about the various policies and how to use it and show some demonstrations of it in action. But first, as always, we're going to cover the news, and then we'll end the show with the tip of the week. And it feels strange being back. It's been a few weeks.
It's a little bit weird. I feel like the show with both of us on it now.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm used to being
either
one of us.
It's kind of awkward. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how it goes.
We'll have to work through it.
Yeah. All right.
So, let's get to the news.
But next week it'll be weird again.
Yeah. Well, that's
the
true.
Good news.
So yeah. So next week I'll be at Tech Ed,
and I won't.
And you won't. So we'll figure out how to make it work.
We don't know what we're gonna do yet. So it should be fun.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be good. So, in case you didn't see the news, we actually had a pretty
everybody saw this news.
Pretty large announcement earlier this week.
This was the blog post heard around the world.
So, we launched the Windows Azure Toolkit for iOS, which is a pretty significant, toolkit. Essentially, what we've done is we built on the same model for the Windows Phone 7, where we provided a set of libraries, samples, documentation, so forth, to make it easier to build applications on a device that targets services in the cloud. And so the iOS toolkit is essentially an Objective-C library that makes it easier for you to interact with storage and to also interact with the services that are running up in Windows Azure. And so we released this. We announced it earlier this week. Got a lot of really good coverage. So
yeah.
Got picked up a lot. A lot of people seem to be excited about it. And
I think this was one of those things, like every once in a while we do one of these things that people just... they're taken aback by the fact that we're actually doing that, because in this case, it's we hate iPhones, right? Because we're busy with Windows Phone 7, building our own thing, and doing that, and so people are sort of surprised that we did something that helps you if you're an iPhone or iPad developer to use Windows Azure. But from the Windows Azure perspective, it makes total sense.
Yep.
We don't care. We want you to be running in our cloud using our stuff. Even if you are doing a Windows Phone 7 app, which we hope you are, you're probably also doing an iPhone app. You're probably also doing
an Android app.
We'd like all that stuff to be able to use the same back end. So this makes total sense, but I think it's the sort of thing that in a headline looks kind of funny.
Yeah.
And so, I saw this picked up sort of all over the place.
I particularly like Mary Jo Foley's blog. She quoted something that I wrote, and essentially it was, we want to build a great, libraries to have a great experience on devices, even for non-Microsoft platforms. And I think she ended up saying, "That's right, folks, directly from the softy's mouth," or something
like
that.
Wow.
So, it's been good.
Yeah.
One thing that I thought also people picked up and have liked is the fact that we released it to GitHub. So all the library, the samples, the documentation, and so forth, they're all available up on GitHub. So you can take a look at it. We've got the full source code for the libraries available, also the samples. And then in terms of some of the downloads, what we've also done is provided this zip file, a zip package, where you can just get the compiled library. So it's a .a record for the Objective-C class.
Yeah.
And we have one for the emulator as well as one for the device. So you can use those compiled version of the library. And then also we have this cloudready.devices.zip. The reason for this is there's not really a first class, or there's not a way to create the Windows Azure package on a Mac. There's no way to run CSPAC, you can't use Visual Studio, and so forth. So for an iOS developer that wants to get started and use these services that we've built, how are they going to do it? We didn't want them to have to go to a Windows machine and compile and create this package in order to deploy it. And so what we've done is we've provided this zip file, which includes the CSPKG file and the CSCFG file, so that you can just take these resources and deploy them directly to Windows Azure without having to recompile or make changes. All you really need to do is update the CSCFG file to point to your own storage account and to leverage your own certificates.
So if you wanted to build custom services if you wanted to actually change what runs in the cloud, then... you're going to need the Windows Azure SDK at some point, which only runs on Windows, so you will need to have a Windows machine to do that part of it. But if you don't, all you need is the services that are already baked in, which are like proxy services to storage and
membership services.
Membership, so that you can do login and things like that. Then, Wade already built it on his machine.
Yep, built on my machine.
He has a Windows machine. He could do that. So,
That's
pretty cool.
Those resources are available. And then the sample, if you take a look at the other resources, we've got this sample. And the sample, if you download the version 1 tag, it already has the compiled library in there, and then it's got a sample app that literally once you get it, you can either put your storage account name and key into the app and run it, or you could use the proxy services through the Cloud Ready package and run the app against those. So pretty easy to get started. In fact, if you take a look at the original blog post, if I can come back to it real quick, we've got some videos that walk you through the process. So here's a video that shows you exactly, it's up on Channel 9, shows you how to deploy the Cloud Ready package. Then we've got another one that shows you how to get started with the sample. So it's pretty cool.
Pretty neat.
Yeah, so check it out. If you have feedback, let us know. We're going to have another drop of it here pretty soon with some updates. So,
what about Android?
We also announced that we will release the a version of the toolkit for Android as well. So we'll have a Windows Azure toolkit for Android. It'll use Eclipse running in Windows with Java as the platform. So we'll first target storage, and we'll have an Android version of a Java client for Windows Azure Storage. And then we'll take a look at using the push notification service, which is like makes me think of R2D2, but there's a name for the Android push notification service, and I'm forgetting what it is. But we'll support that as well as some other services as well.
So that's coming. So
that is coming.
Soon, I don't know.
Next month. We should have a first drop of it available next month.
That's very cool. So, yep.
Yeah.
Rounding out, what else? What are we going to do after that? We're going to build Windows Azure Toolkit for Casio watches, maybe, or HP calculators.
We'll let you do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll get on that. But this is very cool. I think cloud is a big component of a lot of phone apps or other sort of other devices, and us having the breadth and the coverage so that it's easy to get started on all those. It's pretty good thing for the cloud. So
moving forward, the other thing that I wanted to cover is we also announced some updates coming to the Windows Phone 7 toolkit for Windows Azure. And specifically, one thing that we're working on is Access Control Service integration. Mm-hmm. Vittorio actually has a fabulous blog post on this.
Captain Identity,
where what he's done is he's walked through and highlighted the exact process. So we're going to update the new project template wizard so that after you specify your account storage information, the next step will be deciding whether or not you want to use the default ASP.NET membership service or if you want to use the access control service. If you choose the access control service, then you'll be able to specify your namespace and put in the management key, and then we'll script off and create all the identity providers, we'll generate the default rules, and we'll register your relying party or your application within the access control service. So everything will be set up and configured automatically. And then when you go to log in, you'd be able to choose from one of the identity providers that have been added. So I think it'll be a pretty significant update. And then, so in addition to ACS, we've also done some pretty significant updates to the UI for the application. So you can see here on this top image, what we've done is restyled it. We've taken the Metro theme and updated it so that we don't have this default MVC
ASP.NET template
any longer. So some, you know, it's a much needed update and refresh of the UI.
Yep. And these are going to keep coming, right? I mean, the idea with this stuff is not, we shipped it, so we're done.
Exactly.
Like, all this stuff is actively being maintained, and we're adding new toolkits. And
such as then the next thing to announce is that we're going to be providing support for queues as well from the phone. So you'll be able to interact directly to your storage account and queues from the device or go through the proxy services.
We had every other letter of the alphabet, and now we've put in queues.
Now we put in queues.
That's good.
All right. And then let's see what else.
Push notifications.
Oh, push notifications. Yep. So one thing that slid through the mix announcements was the fact that we released the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone 7 version 1.1, which provided support for push notifications. And if you haven't taken a look at it, do so, because it's out-of-the-box support. We handle the creation of the channel between your service running in Windows Azure and the Microsoft Push Notification Service, registering and storing that channel information within Windows Azure tables, and then supporting all the different types of pushes, such as raw, you know, being able to push directly into an app, toast, as well as tile.
tile notification.
So pretty nice. Again, what's nice about these toolkits is it gives you that really nice F5 experience, so that you know, you just get the project template, new project template, hit F5, and it's all working.
Yeah.
So so this was provided. This is already available if you go up and download the existing service.
I am running your app on my phone right now, the Babelcam.
Oh, Babelcam.
Babelcam, yeah. I am running, which uses push notifications
nice.
To sort of to send back data. And so, yeah.
Yeah, Babelcam was an app that I built for Mix. And essentially what you can do is take a picture of, you know, like a document, and it'll take that document, pass it to an OCR service running in Windows Azure, grab all the text. Also, optionally, it will translate it into another language for you if you'd like, using the Bing Translator service. And then it uses push notifications to send it back to the app to tell you what the text is. So,
So
there'll be a new version of that available at TechEd next week that I'll be demoing.
Okay. So. It's a fun app.
Yeah.
It misspells everything I take a picture of. But
well, the OCR
service is not fantastic.
Yeah, the OCR service is an open source OCR service. So. Kind of get what you pay for, I guess.
I took a picture of the cloud cover, and it put an E instead of an O. Cloud cover, which was a translation into the French.
How much did the app cost you?
I believe it cost me zero.
Yeah.
So I see. Okay.
Let's move on. All right.
But that's cool. I think push notifications are one of the coolest parts about Windows Phone 7.
Yep.
And these other devices also have sort of their versions of some sort of push notification thing. So getting support for all those across the board also, it's a good reason to have a cloud component to your application to do those pushes.
Yep.
So it's a very important part, I think, of that puzzle. So it's good to see that.
Yeah. All right.
Here's a tool from the support team who built a tool for SQL Azure that basically just collects diagnostic information. And so it's a tool that you can kind of just point at. You just plug in sort of the credentials for your SQL Azure database, and it goes and runs all the right queries and whatever and spits out a bunch of the diagnostic info that you need. Like, for example, if you're contacting support and the sort of standard stuff they end up needing. This is a sort of handy tool that gives you all that stuff. Maybe you can spot sort of what sort of issue you have, or maybe you just get the extra info you need for that. But I thought it was worth mentioning that there's that tool there, and so if there is something weird that you've got with your database in SQL Azure, you might run this and just sort of see exactly what it can output for you.
Is it grabbing data above and beyond what you would normally get from SQL Server or SQL Azure on your own? Or?
I don't know exactly what it's getting and how, but I believe it's all stuff you could have gotten. I mean,
it's just querying and
doing SQL Azure. You could have gotten all this data yourself. It doesn't have some backdoor sort of thing. But it's a tool that knows the questions to ask, sort of produces a little report for you,
cool.
All the details.
Excellent.
So,
awesome.
So cool tool. And this last thing is this is a post on the Windows Azure team blog about storing encrypted data in Windows Azure, and actually takes you through a few ISVs who have built solutions around storing data in the cloud and storing that data encrypted. I think if you can read those if you want to go see, you know, what are people doing, you might actually be interested in one of the solutions they have. But I think the meta point or sort of architectural point about this is really about the encryption, and about if you're going to store data in the cloud that really needs to be secure. People ask us about compliance things all the time. And one way to sort of wipe out that any question about sort of the security model and the trust boundary for the cloud is to encrypt all the data before it goes there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you believe encryption works, which you should, then the math shows you, right, that it doesn't even matter if anyone got access to that data that's encrypted. As long as the keys are safe, that encrypted data is useless. And so all of these ISVs who are sort of featured in this post are doing some form of, they're doing encryption and then using Windows Azure Storage to store that data, providing a fully secure solution that uses the cloud for sort of inexpensive, highly available storage, but doesn't introduce sort of a new, doesn't extend that perimeter of where you have to have security and trust in your solution.
Awesome.
So, so kind of cool, and you can read through to get the actual details of exactly what they're doing. Some of them have full-blown case studies that you can click through and go read all that.
Great, excellent. All right, so
cool. Let's talk about
the news.
Traffic
Manager. So, Yeah, so Traffic Manager is, like I said, a new service that we announced at Mix. Essentially provides you load balancing capabilities for your applications. So I can deploy my apps up into our data centers and then use Traffic Manager and via DNS to control how users are routed to my application. So I could...
So this is across data centers?
Across data centers.
As opposed to sort of the load balancing you already get in Windows Azure, which is VMs, you know, behind a load balancer. This is... We put the whole world and all of our six data centers where you can deploy an app today in Windows Azure, put that all behind sort of a DNS system that can do, well, a few different kinds. We'll talk about those kinds of routing that it can do. But this is sort of big.
This is very big.
I'm not sure. If you've needed this before, then you totally understand. Like, if you tried to deploy an app to several different data centers and then route people to the right place and whatever, there are some other solutions. There are companies who do DNS services that can do this. It's often quite expensive, and it's not easy to figure out how to do this and figure it out. And so if you've had to build something like this yourself, then I think you already get that. Look, having something built into your cloud platform that can just do that, that's really cool.
Yeah.
If you haven't done it yet, you may anticipate that someday you're going to need this, and I think it's still worth checking out. As soon as you reach the point where you want to deploy maybe one data center in North America and one in Europe, and you just want to route people to whichever one is closer, you're going to want this. And so I think it's a very cool service that we've added to sort of the arsenal that you've got in Windows Azure, and I think it differentiates us. So.
Absolutely. So what I've got here is I've deployed an application into three of our data centers. And so you can see I've got it running in East Asia, South Central U.S., and West Europe. And essentially, it's the same app, same application, but I've got it deployed in each data center. And the use case here is that I want to use the Global Traffic Manager to help me route the traffic appropriately. So in most cases, I think the most natural use for this would be performance-based, right? So I've, rather than just having my app deployed in North America in a data center and then forcing everyone in Europe or Asia or Australia to always route, to this data center, use the Global Traffic Manager as a way to help figure out where, via in terms of performance, where it's most natural to send that user. So in this case, if I've got a user running, in Asia, they should hit the East Asia data center and so forth. And so it's the same app deployed everywhere. So if we take a look, you can see I've got my world app deployed. I've got two instances of it, and I've got basically the same stuff replicated in all. Yep. What I want to do is first show you what these apps look like. So if I come to my deployed instance, let me open it up for each one of the data centers. And I want to show you how we're going to demonstrate where it is that we're running. So I'll open up the app directly.
Right, and this is just like deploying. I mean, it just so happens that Wade has deployed the exact same bits to these three different apps that are located in different servers.
Yep.
To Windows Azure, this is just, you've deployed
three different apps. Yep.
And
three apps.
And in fact, a feature you might ask for is, can I just give you the bits once and have you deploy three? And we don't have that today. So today, you're going to have to go deploy it several times.
And there's some advantages to that as well. I mean, it gives us the ability, and we'll get to some of the different policies you can define in the Global Traffic Manager, but in some cases, you may want to have that control because you may not be looking for just the performance-based model. Right. You may be looking at something else.
Yep.
But at any rate, what I've done here is, even though the primary bits here are identical, I have made changes so that based on which app I'm hitting, it updates the style, the theme, so that we have a different color.
I like the lime green one the best.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
So you can see this one here, I'm running in West Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the blue is running in South Central U.S., and then for the lime green one, which you really like, that's running in East Asia. And so right now you can also see that in each case I'm pointing to that particular app. So here we've got the GTM World App Dash EA, GTM World App Dash SC, and then also Dash WE. And so what we want to do is define a policy that sits above each of these individual URLs that the Global Traffic Manager will manage and then use to route us appropriately.
Right, because we'd like to hand out one URL.
One URL.
Like our domain that we own, perhaps, yep. right? And give that out to everybody, but then have people intelligently routed to the yep. right place.
So in the portal, now I should note too that this is CTP, and I yep. believe you have to opt into this program, right?
That's right.
So if you don't have access to this, I think on home, beta programs. Yep. If you take a look at the beta programs, you'll see there's Traffic Manager here. Mine is active. Yours may not be active. Go ahead and try to activate it. I think every Wednesday we approve.
I
we
think
do the
that's
next
the deal.
Round.
And I think at this point
there's
we're
no
keeping
backlog.
Up with the
yep.
yeah. I mean we sort of reserve the right if you know because it's CTP and whatever yep. that if we're flooded with a bunch of people because everybody watches Cloud Cover.
Yep.
Now that
we
they
know
see
this Friday, there's going to be a ton.
You know. So we may not approve everybody, but I think at the moment we're actually keeping up, and so yep. you've got less than a week wait, you know, depending on when you sign up,
yep.
Before you can do it. So
once you're enabled and it's you've been added to the beta program under Virtual Network, you're going to see Traffic Manager appear, and you'll also have policies underneath. I've already defined some, but pretend they're not there for the moment. When you want to set up a policy in the portal, and it's worth noting, all the Global Traffic Manager policies are set up in the portal. It's very easy to do. I don't need to really modify my code much or do anything specific. But you can click Create, and you'll have the ability to choose a couple of different policies here. So this is what Steve and I were talking about. There's three different policies that define how we will load balance your app. The top one there is performance, and I think that's probably the easiest to understand, right? Depending on where my user originates from, route them to the closest data center. We want to give them the best experience we can.
And closest here means basically the same thing as it does when we talk about the CDN
yep.
and getting routed to the closest data center. It actually means whatever data center should yield the best performance,
yep.
and that's based on network conditions
yep.
and whatever. It's sort of, but that's actually sort of measured sort of performance, and so it really depends. Where you're coming from, this should route you to sort of the fastest, I guess is the best way,
fastest.
The fastest connection to a data center that you can get. And so I bet that's what most people are going to use this feature for,
yep.
is just to do like what you did, deploy in a few different data centers, give every user the best experience by routing them to the closest thing.
Yep. Another policy we've got here is failover. And failover specifically means so when you define a failover policy, you'll add multiple instances or multiple of your apps to it in an ordered fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have one that's at the top, then I'll have some underneath it. And the way failover works is it's always going to route to the first one if it's available. However, if the first application that you've specified fails for whatever reason, you've taken it down, there's a hardware failure, something happens, it's going to go to the next application in that list. And some questions, like someone actually asked, well, wouldn't I want failover plus performance to mm-hmm. get bundled together,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily, because I may not want to always have to have my app running in these various data centers, and maybe I want to have everything running in North America, and then one or two small instances running just for failover in another data center that maybe it just has a message that says, sorry, we're down right now,
right.
We'll be coming back up soon.
And this is back to the, look, you deploy whatever you want to
exactly.
these different apps. All Traffic Manager knows is you want to always route here,
yep.
but if failover to here. Which means you could have some generic app that says, I'm sorry, the thing you were trying to do is not going to work. Here's a fail whale.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Asia. We'll get you back to North America soon.
And you could have all your apps sort of fail over to the same thing or something like that. And so, it's okay to do that sort of thing.
Yep.
And do that with failover in particular.
Yep. And then the last is round robin. And, this is, I think, pretty easy to understand. Essentially, it's just, saying distribute the traffic across these hosted instances. Now, one thing, especially for round robin, that's worth noting is we don't always have to load balance across data centers.
Right.
These could also be load balanced across different apps deployed in the same data center. So one thing that I think is interesting about the round robin policy is, let's say I've got version 1 of my application running on 4 hosted instances, and I want to get started or I want to deploy version 1.1.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I've got some questions like, will users like some of the new features that I've included?
Yep.
There are going to be problems. One thing you could end up doing is via this round robin is just include one instance of that version 1.1 as part of the round robin policy. And then, let's say you've got the 4 of version 1 and now you've got 1 of version 1.1. Now you're sending 20% of your traffic to the new instance rather than all of
it. Is that true? Aren't you sending 50%? I mean, I thought the round robin just round robin across apps. So if you have two apps, half go to one, half go to the other.
Okay, I explained it poorly, I guess. If I had the app listed four times, version 1.1, like four different versions of it in the round robin
policy. So that gives you, so basically, right, there's a way in the round robin policy, even though there's no sort of explicit control, I want X percent to go here and X percent to go here. You can actually do it by putting that app several.
I explained it poorly. I
didn't
thank
understand
you for
where you're going. Yeah. Right, but right. So you could put the same app in a few times and then one of the new version or something, and there you could get your basically A/B testing of sorts to do it. And, you know, there's more to come on this stuff. So CTP, we've given basically three sort of fairly simple policies that you can choose among, and then of course you can customize. I think that the plan over time is to expose sort of more power in those policies, more customization.
Yep.
It could be that someday there will be some dial that lets you slide from 100% to this app to 100% to this app and really do A/B testing that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or other things. Those are all of the underlying platform. These are all capabilities that are really there. It's just a question of exposing those things properly.
So why don't we show this in action? So here, let me show you the performance policy. I'll show you what I've got set up. First of all, I've got performance specified, and then what's nice here is you can just type in some stuff and it'll show you what's available. So initially when I did it, I typed GTM, and of course it listed the three GTM DNS names, you know, and so it makes it nice and easy to find the ones that you want. I've added them over here, so these have been selected, so they're part of my policy. And then I'll come back to this in 1 second. The only other thing I did is I specified a DNS prefix. So when using it in the CTP, it's always going to be something.ctp.trafficmanager.com. In this case, I've specified performance.gtm. So this would be the URL that I use within the browser, and then GTM is managing it, you know, forwarding me along appropriately.
And you can put a custom domain in front of this also, right?
Exactly.
Just do a CNAME record, just like
absolutely
over any listed app and do this. Yeah.
The last thing is the DNS time to live, and so this is how long it caches the policy. And so by default, it's 300 seconds. For the demo, I mean, 300 may be exactly what you want.
Right.
To make it easier to demonstrate, I've reduced it to 30.
The trade-off here is, I mean, the smaller the number there, the faster
it recovers.
There'll be change, like if you're doing failover, whenever, the faster the DNS expires means the faster the people will start failing over to the new thing. But the lower the number, the more often people are going to actually have to resolve the DNS. The DNS resolution will go the whole way up to the chain instead of being cached at various places. And so it's sort of this classic, you know, which one are you optimizing for? And there are lots of reasonable values to choose here, but that's why it's a dial that you can change.
You can choose. Now, the last thing also is this monitoring endpoint. And what the Traffic Manager does is it allows you to also specify an endpoint that it will occasionally ping and communicate with to see, basically to monitor the health of your app. And we can walk through what that code looks like. Essentially, you're returning a value back to the global traffic manager, telling that everything's okay. And then if something were to happen and your app is no longer responding to that, now it knows that, hey, the app isn't healthy, it's not able to respond to my requests, and I need to take action. Failover, go somewhere
else,
like
what does failover do? Like, how does it know when it's time to failover?
And it's essentially through monitoring that endpoint.
So you get to say, in this case, just make an HTTP request on port 80 to /app health.
Yep.
I believe as long as it returns a success code, then
and I'll show you what that looks like.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So let's take a look at this in action. So if I come to a new browser locally and I hit the performance .gtm CTP, guess where it routes us? To the US South Central
That's
data
good.
Center.
That's
so that is good. You know, I refresh, it's going to keep us going there. Let's take a look, though, and make sure that if we're in Europe or if we're in Asia, that it routes us to the appropriate one.
All right, I've packed my bag.
Let's get on
the plane and let's fly to Europe.
Well,
and do you have a better way to do
that?
Yeah,
I have a better way to do that. So what I've done also is in the instances that I've deployed, I've set up RDP. So I can remote into the instance running in East Asia, and then I can open up the app there.
That's a little more practical, I guess, than flying there, although it's not as fun.
It isn't as fun.
We could have brought a camera crew and then,
I've been traveling
a lot
lately. I don't know that I want to.
That is true.
I don't want to go anywhere else at this point.
And you're traveling next week, too.
I'm traveling next week, too.
All right. We won't go to Europe.
So I'm remoting
Asia. We're going to Asia now.
We are going to Asia.
All right.
So I've remoted into the instance running there, and I did this earlier as well. I added a a shortcut, so I didn't have to remember. And you can see, look at that.
That's my favorite. We're lime green.
Yep, performance.gtm. Now we're running, this is originating from the data center in East Asia, and you can see here that it routed us to East Asia. So that's good. That's a successful
test.
Are
we leaving this app up so that people can, because we have an international audience.
Yeah, I'll
let us know if for some reason you're not routed to the data center you would think you'd be routed to. Of course, there are always sort of surprises every once in a while, because it turns out you actually have a really good connection to East Asia or something like that. But yeah, but largely you should get what you'd expect here. If you're in Europe, you should see the European one. If you're somewhere in Asia, you will see the East Asia one. And if you're in North America, you'll certainly get to that's U.S. South Central.
Oh, you know what? I just remoted into the South Central when I meant to do the Western Europe.
Yeah, see, we're already in the U.S.
Yeah.
You got confused.
I did get confused.
That's
okay. We were in Asia, and then I figured we'd have to come back here.
Right. That's true. We did. That's we made a return trip. Now we're gonna head to Europe.
Here, let me open this up.
Did you try this? Weren't you in Europe like last week? Or
I was.
So did you do this test?
I didn't think ahead to try it.
See, that's why we need our users, our viewers, to go do this.
And so here now we're coming out of the Western Europe data center, and of course it routes us
to the Halloween theme.
So great. So that's performance. I think that's really useful. That's awesome. And I think in a future show, we're going to really talk about building global applications.
Yeah.
And GTM features prominently in that, right?
Yeah, and that's right. That's, I think, one thing that we will dig into, because as you look at this, you might wonder about things like, well, what about the data?
Which data
center is that in? Or am I replicating or something like that? And I think that's one of the things that we should really do a future show about, because there is more to really architecting a good solution that handles all that and does it well.
Yep.
But the Windows Azure Traffic Manager is sort of a key piece of any of those solutions in that it handles that sort of top level, you know, performance-based routing or failover or whatever you need to make sure that you can actually make use of that app being deployed to a bunch of different data centers.
Mm-hmm. Let me show you the code to this app. So one thing that's worthwhile is this sample app, this world application, we've also turned into a hands-on lab, and it's part of the Windows Azure Platform Training kit and course.
If you were watching all this to learn this,
you could have just avoided it.
We tricked you.
Yeah.
You could have just read it, looked at the code already. So this is actually the code that's in that lab? So you'll see exactly
this code.
Yeah, so this
is what it is.
Okay.
There's really nothing here that shocking. I mean, it's a very simple app.
Yep.
What I do want to point out, though, is how we handle the application health. And we alluded to it. If you take a look at here, it's very, very simple. Essentially, we've got a service manager, and I'll show you what that is. And we take a look with this service manager to say, get the hosted service status, and we pass in the service URL prefix. So, you know, the data center that traffic manager is monitoring. So not the overall traffic manager URL, but the specific data center DNS name.
Okay.
We take a look at to see what its status is, and if it's online, we just end up, we're just fine. If not, we close the response, which does not give it the success, so we don't respond to their request, and essentially that tells the traffic manager that it's not responding, we need to take whatever action is defined by this policy.
And return new empty result ends up giving you a 200 okay with no content,
which is a
success
response code.
If you actually respond with a valid HTTP success code, I'm not even sure it has to be 200.
I think
any success code actually works.
This is why we're just closing the response.
But just closing means you were not returning a success code. I think you could probably also return a 404 or a 500 or something like that. And that would indicate to the traffic manager that something is wrong.
Right.
And that means for failover, stop routing here, go somewhere else.
Yep.
And in general is how you sort of signal that.
Yeah. I think closing the response and just, you know, if something, and remember, we're managing this from the app. You may not need to write code like this at all, right?
You might just put in a URL that's just slash, and that means we'll just load the home page.
Exactly,
and
if it ever doesn't respond to the request, then we've got the error.
Exactly, and I actually bet that's a very common thing to do. I know that, I mean, I've used application request routing sometimes to do sort of like load balancing or reverse proxy in front of some services. And it has a similar capability where you can sort of say, hey, every so often ping this and make sure it's working. And there, I think one of the most common things to do is to just have it load the root of that website and make sure that that comes up.
Yeah.
Unless you have an app where that's actually not supposed to work, like you have to be authenticated or whatever, you know, so then you're going to build something else that's just for the status checks. But if you don't have that, I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing to just load whatever that homepage is and make sure that things come back okay.
Yep. Now, the reason we've included this as part of the sample is we give you the ability to kind of trick Traffic Manager into mm-hmm. thinking that something's down so that you can take a look at the result.
I was going to ask what this method actually does, that's what it's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So here, if you see this page here, it lists out all the different instances that are part of our policy,
gotcha.
And you have the ability to hit disable. Now, in terms of the app, when you click disable, what it's doing is it's updating table storage and basically changing the status, the service status that gets responded. So if this value ends up being false, then we end up closing the response, and we're able to simulate a failure to the Global Traffic Manager.
So every time we get that health check, we're really just it's a lookup table of should we say we're online or not, and so it's just.
We should make it clear that this is a cheat that you can test out and kind of see how a failover works, how around Rob, you know, all these things work without actually having to have a data center go down.
Right.
Which,
if you have to just single-handedly bring down a data center to test your app out, that's kind of tough.
So, yeah.
But we're still failing. We can't actually do that part of the demo.
We can't actually do that part of the demo at the moment.
Okay.
So,
that's all right. We'll give
I'm going to keep this up and running.
We'll give people the URLs later, and they can figure it out.
The URLs are failover.gtm. et cetera, and then I also have the round robin.
I'm sort of assuming it's actually working, and it's our proxy setup on our corporate network, which is always
fun.
A little bit difficult. So. And this is probably working. So when you watch this, you can probably go to those things, and then anybody can hit that disable button.
Anyone can hit the disable button.
So everyone can have fun disabling and re-enabling different data centers.
I'm curious what happens once we disable them all. I haven't tested that.
That's interesting. I don't know what failover does when it goes down the list and they're all invalid. Well, I think I know what our viewers are going to be doing when they watch this show.
Yeah. Yep. In fact,
so give it a shot.
Yep. Yeah. Turn them all off. See what happens. Cool.
Very cool. So I guess that's the Traffic Manager.
Yeah.
I just want to repeat. It's a really powerful piece of the platform. If you are building a global, you don't have to be giant scale doing this. You just need to have a global presence for this, because you do not want to send your customers in Europe sort of round trip to the U.S. to get back your homepage. And so even if you just have a couple instances in these different data centers, I think it's very common that people want to do this and want to do some sort of performance-based routing. Or for sort of super high availability, if you want to be able to display something even if there's a natural disaster and an entire data center is lost or something, doing failover across data centers is also a perfectly reasonable thing to use this for.
Yep.
And it's in CTP now. It's free for now. We haven't said anything beyond that. I think we'll see as we go through CTP, and we'll figure this out as things get launched.
Look at that. Okay. I wondered if IE is somehow having an issue caching it or something like that.
Yeah, you run into some things we will talk about sort of caching.
We're going to get to that in a moment.
DNS
that's our
things.
Tip. Yeah.
So let me show it.
Yeah, so here we go. So
let's
here's the failover one, right?
Yep.
Now, one thing to note is, again, that TTL value that's specified is 30 seconds. However, because of I don't actually understand all of the underlying DNS reasons, but it could take up to 120 seconds for it to fail over. So,
it's this cache after cache. Everyone can cache it for 30 seconds, and so
along the way,
including your local machine and the first DNS server.
You've got your machine. You've got obviously the failover.gtm. Then you've got your essentially what I'm going to do is right now we're on the South Central U.S. region. I'm going to disable that guy.
And is that because that's the order for failover?
Yes,
put South Central first, and then
so if I come back here to the portal while that's going, I have to log back in again. This is how we log in when we're using our corporate accounts.
Yep. And Wade's password is just password.
It
for
is just
people
password.
Who wanna
well, no, it's password one
that.
Now.
Password
I had to update it.
Yeah, because password's very insecure.
Yeah, so if you take a look at
But now you'll never forget it because we've got it on video, so yeah, good.
I can just watch this again to remind myself.
Good work. I watched Wade once do a talk where he showed his password.
I did show my
like
password.
His Microsoft password on the screen in front of everybody.
Yeah, so you can see here in the, so for the failover, it's an ordered list. And the very first one we have in the list is our South Central.
Right. So when you hit failover, the first thing it tries to do is South Central.
And
then
it'll
the next
go to
one
East,
is East Asia.
Asia.
So now that we've disabled this one,
we
if we waited
wait
long enough.
Yeah. So one thing that's nice, this app will also give you tickers to count down. So you can see down here under the health monitor timeout, it's ticking up. Once it hits 120, it'll move back to a ready state.
Okay.
When I refresh, at that point, we should have exceeded all the different TTLs for all the different layers, and it should take us to East Asia. So we'll wait. So what else?
And how often does so Traffic Manager pings that health status, whatever thing. Do you know how often that happens?
I believe that's every 30 seconds as well.
Every 30 seconds, okay. Because that's part of the, because you have the caching of the various DNS things. And then if you ever actually go the whole way up to ask sort of for the DNS entry, there's a question of, does it actually know that this data center has failed or
so
whatever
in addition to the cache, it's also waiting for that next ping as well.
Right. And so there are a lot of, as you go and try this out and test it, just keep in mind that there are a lot of timings that happen up to sort of a hierarchical caching and sort of polling intervals and whatever. And so be prepared for that. That's why we're giving it the full 120 seconds here.
120 seconds. I don't want to refresh it and be disappointed.
We're covered. No, it's such a lame demo if you hit refresh and the color doesn't change.
Exactly.
And so, okay, it says
ready.
Let's try it. Refreshing.
Hey,
lime green, my favorite.
East Asia.
Right, which was the next one in the list.
Next one on the list.
And we could do it again, but we're not going to because it takes a couple minutes every time.
But what's interesting to note now, so that's the failover. Since it's disabled, let's come here to the round robin. You can see we're on the East Asia. Since it applies across all, right now the round robin policy will also think that East Asia is down, so we'll never get routed to East Asia.
Right.
One thing to note for the round robin is, since it's local DNS caching, we've also got this ticker right here. Wait until that is expired because the refresh.
Because otherwise you won't actually resolve DNS. This magic all happens at the DNS layer.
Exactly.
If you're not actually resolving the DNS because your machine already knows how to resolve it because it's cached it, then you won't see anything change. If you've waited long enough, then...
So now we should get routed to the...
we should be back to East Asia again if we hit F5,
right? Oh, you know what? Yeah, we should
because
be
South
back
Central
to East Asia.
Is off.
Yeah,
I think normally we'd sort of be going in order here, but now we should get to lime green, I believe. Come on, lime green.
All right, well, let's... Come on, lime green.
Well, this is again, actually, but the 30 seconds
wait.
Is also...
Here's another thing that... If I...
A new window. Yeah, because...
So, yeah.
IE may cache.
We're going to talk about this in a moment.
Yeah. Let's do that, right?
Okay.
It's about time. So that's Traffic Manager.
Yep.
In a nutshell, it's in CTP today. You got to go sign up, click the beta programs thing, sign up, activate it, play around with it. It's completely free for now. Don't know what it's going to be after it's out of CTP. But it's a very cool capability. Go check it out.
Yeah.
And
take a look at the hands-on lab associated with it as well.
Yes,
which there's a lot of great information
stuff
about it.
And some sort of more details there, and all the code if you want this actual app to play with, which is this app is very handy to see the changes that happen.
Yep.
So worth getting that too. With that, I guess it's the scariest, but also it's kind of like getting to the peak at a roller coaster where you're excited, you're nervous, you don't know what's going to happen, and then you just sort of plummet afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's when it's time for us to ask Bob to help us introduce
the tip
of the week. I was thinking traffic related.
Traffic? Yeah.
So,
traffic backup.
I mean, there's a lot I can imagine Bob doing with that. Let's just leave it at traffic. So something about traffic. And here it is, your tip of the week.
So I almost had a heart attack. Looking in the rearview mirror, saw myself the next car back. Looking in the rearview mirror, about to have a heart attack.
Okay, so obviously a lot of kind of confusing things happening with caching and so forth.
Yep.
One thing that happens, I've done most of this demonstration locally on my machine. By default, Internet Explorer will cache the DNS records much longer than 30 seconds.
Yep.
And so even if you
which
wait...
Which is good for performance.
Which is good
That's
for performance,
it,
absolutely.
Right?
But if you were to wait for 30 seconds, you wouldn't see the changes because the very first step, you know, IE is caching. I don't even know what that default time is. I mean, it's a lot longer. And so
it's shorter than the time it generally takes you to travel from one continent to another.
That is true.
But it's longer than it takes to sort of
just
test one
refresh.
Of these things by hitting refresh. And so in actual practice, it's not an extraordinarily long period of time. But for testing, it'll totally mess you up.
Yeah, it will. So you could end up testing it by, you could remote in. Like for the performance test, it was pretty easy. I was able to remote in to different data centers. But even if you remote into those data centers and use IE and try to test with the round robin or failover, you may not end up seeing what you'd expect. So there's a trick, and this trick, we should be clear, only applies to Internet Explorer. If you use other browsers, they have different values set to govern how long to cache. But what we've done here is, even on this page, you'll see we've got this, click this registry script to shorten the default cache period. And so if you take a look at it, you can save it, download it. I'll open it up. And essentially what it's doing is creating a registry key. I don't even know what this ends up turning into, but essentially it will set the cache period as low as possible for Internet Explorer, so that after 30 seconds you can see the effect. Now, as you saw even in that last demo, it doesn't always seem to refresh. The most effective way to do it is close the browser sometimes and open up a new browser.
A new one. Yeah.
And in many cases, this is okay. If you think about it, if you're using round robin or some kind of behavior there, if the same user over a 30-second or minute period or even a 5-minute period is hitting the same instance, it's probably okay. But as you look across different users and different browser instances and so forth, the Global Traffic Manager will be load balancing all those different users, even if the individual user gets routed back to the same application multiple times.
1E is 30.
Is it 30?
So I suspect that this is setting 30 seconds as two different timeouts, one for
the server info and
the
DNS cache timeout,
and then one that I'm not sure what the server info one does. So you might want to change these back after you go change these. You might want to test these, but then also flip back to
when you want to flip back, we also provide the script to reset them.
Look at that, already taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one other tip, if you are on a network with a corporate proxy, so we've talked about it on this show many times. Yeah. Microsoft has a corporate proxy infrastructure that routes the traffic. The proxy, in our case, will also have its own cache period. So even if I change the value in the browser, I still can't get around the corporate proxy. So in this case, I've gotten onto a different guest network.
Most proxy servers will do DNS caching or something. I mean, you do.
So if you're on your own corporate network and it's just not working, it could end up being because of the proxy infrastructure you have as
so
well.
So one meta point here is that it's always hard to, all this stuff, like testing CDN is also kind of problematic for these reasons or whatever. All this stuff, there's a bunch of caching that goes on there, a bunch of proxies in between, there's whatever. And so when you're trying to figure out what's going on, try to isolate those different things and see if any of those can kind of be getting in the way and giving you different results than you would expect. So, all right.
Great.
Next week's going to be weird in some fashion because Wade and I are going to be in totally different time zones and different places.
Yep.
I don't know exactly what we're going to do. We've got some ideas, though.
We'll try them out.
So we'll see, but I suspect we will have a show next week of some sort.
Yep.
And so, as always, if you've got stuff that you want us to cover, go on to the Twitters and say @CloudCoverShow something or other.
Yep.
And we will listen and ignore your feedback.
No, we'll try not to.
Okay, I'll ignore your feedback and Wade will listen. So, all right, until next time, thanks.
Thank you.